Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Today, speaking of fires, we got a hot author on today. and he's from Toronto, another Canadian, so this is a Kanakistan interview today.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. So, Mr. David Darlin, thank you for being here.
Hi, guys. Hey, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So, Dave, where did it all start for you?
Well, my mom met my dad in 1957. And wow. From there, it just took off, I guess.
No, but I just wonder, okay, so I always like going into kind of a history of someone. And now you've got 3 books out, I believe, right?
On November 30th, my third book will be published, correct.
Right. So you haven't been doing this your whole life. What made you change what you were doing in your life and actually go into the writing world?
Three and a half years ago, I had an accident and ended up needing some surgery on my shoulder. And as I was recovering, I was reading about a novel a day. I've always been a prolific reader, and turning around, I was just devouring books as I was recovering. And then one day I read a book, and I'm not going to name the name or title. However, it was, I think, horrible. I couldn't get into it. I thought it was garbage, and I put it down. I didn't want to waste my time. And my words set my path. My words were, I could write a better book than this. And I had several more weeks off recovering, so I decided, hey, what else am I going to do? Let's do this. So that's how it all started.
Well, that's interesting, but did you already have confidence enough in your writing itself?
Absolutely no. nothing to speak of, really. I had a grade 12 English class where we did creative writing. So that was several decades ago. And
I was going to say, what was that, back in the 70s or something?
Yeah. We had a chisel and our work onto stone tablets back then. Yes.
Well, no, but I did. But what I'm trying to get at is what was it that made you brave enough? What I always call this courage, because there's got to be a lot of courage in someone that spends their life doing, you know, one or two things, or spending their life doing whatever career they're in. And even if they get into an accident or something stops them and you're going to have to do something else, And you might really love reading. You might also love playing guitar. You might doing all those things, but you never went to be a rock star. So what is it that gave you the courage, or was there something that happened that made you think, okay, I could actually publish this. This is good enough.
I grew up in Ajax, just east of Toronto in Ontario. And one of my buddies, a close friend, his name is Jonas Saul. He ended up moving out to British Columbia and traveling around. So we lost touch for a few years, about 10, 15 years. And then we discovered each other again on Facebook. And one of the few things I enjoy about that social media. And I turned around and I asked him what he's doing. And lo and behold, he's been writing. And he has written over 40 novels, screenplays. He's written short stories, standalone novels, and he's doing quite well. His one series has been opted for by Hollywood, and it's going into production. So he just got the high five from that. So I've sent him some of my writings, and as we're reconnecting. And like I said, I had nothing else to do while I'm recovering from shoulder surgery. And he thought it was great. And he says, keep going. Mm-hmm. So, wow. That was amazing. That was just a little bit of the encouragement I needed. And from there, I haven't stopped.
Wow. So just having that confidence with someone that does it for a living gave you enough to go.
Sure.
Did you actually go out to publishers and send them the first thing that you wrote, or did you just do it yourself?
For sure. I don't want to say the trap every new writer gets into is I wrote something, you made some quick edits on it, somebody else looked at it, some quick edits, and you start firing off those query letters to your traditional agents and publishers. And lo and behold, rejection letters keep coming back. So at one point I turned around and said, hey, I think I'm just going to go ahead and self-publish. That's what my friend Jonas did, and he's doing quite well. So when I did do that, and then I had the initial burst of sales from friends and family and a few others. And then I talked to a real editor. So I made the mistake. I went with a second year University of Toronto English student who offered her services for a very discounted price for editing. And I jumped on it. And lo and behold, it just wasn't good. So I did talk to another editor. And after talking with him, I pulled my novel down from self-publishing within 6 weeks of having it gone up.
Wow.
And from there, I ended up working on it for 25 months. Total revision, added 17,000 words, rewrote the story several times before I felt comfortable enough about putting it back up. And that was Serve in the Shadows recruitment.
Wow. So it was kind of like a real learning book for you.
Yes. to say the least. Yes, I learned so much. It's just, I know there's still so much more to learn. I'm more confident now, and I know how to prepare things better and work with an editor, a proofreader, line edits, you name it. Even the graphics designer now for my novels. And it's just a world of knowledge that I didn't really know back then. But I didn't let that hold me back. I put my shoulder down and I leaned into it and eventually overcame all that.
Well, I think that's really important because even I do some self-publishing as well. And I think that it's so important to have all of that done because the downfall with self-publishing is there's so much, I don't know how to say it. I don't want to, it's just, we've just got a lot of stuff out there that's not very good. And mainly it's not very good, I would say, because it hasn't been edited or properly, formatted or something. There's just something people are just getting things out, and it's just not, it would be so much better if they took more time.
I've read some novels that you wouldn't know if it was self-published or traditionally published. They're just phenomenal novels, ended up being self-published because the effort and the energy went into it to ramp up the production. And that's where I'm at now.
Yeah. Well, it makes such a difference. I think that if you get a good editor or a good proofreader or both, and line editors, and you have all that stuff, they're just making the book better, right? So people have to realize that. But that's kind of my say. So now you're working. This is book two of a series, the Noah Hunter series. Who is Noah Hunter?
Noah Hunter is a small town cop. I went the route of Stephen King and created my own small town. Instead of in Maine, I'm using Wyoming. And the town's name is Arrow Point. And it's, if people need to know where it is, it's roughly about 22 miles west of Casper, near the capital of Cheyenne. So, and from there, the small town needed a small police force, and that small police force had a sergeant named Noah Hunter.
But, you know, I have to say, when you have Noah Hunter, how do you get into that character's head? Or let's talk about your character. Is this someone that you've met before, you've seen? Is it kind of you in a place that you'd like to be? Where does this character come from?
I wanted a character that was your average person doing an average job. He's nothing special. He's not a CIA operative with the whole government behind him with all their resources. He's not an army personality. He's just a police force officer. He's a sergeant. So, however, he has one determination that I am envious of, and that's, well, sorry, one character that that I'm envious of, and it's his determination. So he doesn't let the situation get a hold of him. He controls the situation, and he gets involved, and he makes the decisions, even if it harms or threatens his own well-being. He'll jump in. And as to where that came from exactly, I've after 17 years in the Canadian Forces, I was a reservist. I've met many guys like that. Out of nowhere, they would just do something because it was the right thing to do. And that's what Noah Hunter is. He's nothing incredible, but he does the right thing.
Wow. So is that kind of, does that end up being kind of the, how do you say, subtext or the underlying story in your book with Noah Hunter series?
Correct. Yeah, definitely for the first book, he goes through some challenges, to say the least, and surprises. And he's determined to see it through to the end because it's the right thing to do, as well as he makes the right calls at the right time. My first book's title is The Tipping Point. So at a certain part in the novel, he may go to the side of, is this legal or not? Should I be doing this? In the end, spoiler, he comes back to the good side. He doesn't get pushed over the edge. He doesn't succumb to the tipping point. So he does the right thing. And that's, I think, just your average hero, kind of, whether it's a soldier, a police officer, an EMT, they do the right thing. And that's what I find fascinating.
So is your time as a reservist in the forces, does that color the content that you're interested in writing about? I see, you know, shadows of recruitment and then we have Tipping Point and Grave Choices, and they all sort of, they have that feel to them, that same feel. And so it's clear that you're writing from a place that you know. What are your thoughts about that? Like, how do you want to pursue that? Where do you see Noah Hunter growing to?
I just had this talk the other day. Noah, you keep throwing things at a character in a small town and who eventually overcomes these dilemmas and problems. They grow. They grow as a character, and they develop, which is, I think, amazing. That's what I love to see as a reader, a character developing from book to book throughout the series. However, at a certain point, you're going to go, how many things can happen in this small town to this poor cop? It's maybe time to branch out or move on. And I'm almost done writing book three, and book four is going to be centered in and around that same town as well. However, book five, I think it might be time for him to spread his wings just a little bit and work with maybe a law enforcement agency outside of Wyoming.
Why don't you send him to New York and he could become a go-go dancer?
Yeah, there might be crime involved in that.
I'm sure.
No,
I'm sure. If you've ever seen some of the go-go dancers, you know there's a crime. Well, you know, but I still get this feeling that, okay, so we've got a character that you're focused on. How do you feel about your character? And I ask this, I'm not trying to be too weird, but quite a few of the fiction writer guests I've had will describe their characters like they are their children or their family or they have a description and they have a feeling about their characters. Is it that way for you, or are you totally detached from them?
There's a series of main characters that I've grown attached to for sure. Although a lot of people will just kill off some characters for a shock value, but it might not be. The Noah Hunter character I found does grow on me. And there's been many times where it's not writer's block, but I was stuck. I'm sitting there writing and I'm trying to figure out, well, he could do this, or this could happen, or this could happen. And then I sit back and I actually thought about it once and I go, well, that's what I would do. What would Noah Hunter do? By this time, I'm wrapping up book three and he's pretty established. He's got his boundaries set. He's got his moral code. He's got his determinations focused. And what would he do? I go, well, I think he comes back down to solid police work and nose to the ground, so to speak, and follow the clues and follow the information. So, and that's helped me out of, well, I think three now situations where I was kind of waffling on where to go with the next part of my story. So that part I really enjoyed.
So I get a feeling you're not really outlined. Like some writers like to have it outlined, and then they fill in the details. And it sounds like you're kind of more doing it as you go.
I'm not going to lie. I have tried the outlining. I wrote, for my first novel, I wrote 22,000 words on how each chapter is going to go. And then by the fourth chapter... Mm-hmm. It had taken a left turn so quick, and it was good material. And I'm like, I can't stop it from doing this now. And I go, I have to go with this, and all that other work I have didn't amount to anything. And I've tried that a couple times. So I keep it in my head, a general outline of the plot where I need it to go, and I take it from there. And I'm a pantser. That's the author term, the technical one, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So do you know where you're going to end? Like, do you know what's going to happen to your character, the main character or the main people, before you're actually putting the story together? Do you kind of know what the outcome's going to be?
I think in my mind, to have a beginning, middle, and ending as check marks, to meet that goal. So you know, I don't want to talk about the third novel yet. Not many know about it. So let's talk about my first Noah Hunter novel, The Tipping Point. So I don't think I'm going to give away too many spoilers. It's been out a while now, and book two is coming out. So he has a Noah Hunter was investigating a series of murders in Arrow Point, and he turned around and was warned off the case. He received clues and warned off the case, or he'll face the consequences. So what happens next is, in a nutshell, his house blows up and his fiance is dead, and he's left holding the pieces. And then he finds out who was behind it. It ended up being a mafia family from Chicago and organized crime, and he goes after them. So I had the whole first third of the book written in my head almost verbatim. And then I met that one checkpoint, and I go, this is the turning point here. And I go, and then I kind of write to the next point, the major point that keeps me happy with the way things are going to end up going with it throughout the novel. And then I work from the two thirds mark, I work to the end and I meet what I've already pictured in my head. And it doesn't always quite turn out that way, but that's the goal.
They didn't kill his dog, did they?
No, I would not do that.
Good. Yeah. Well, I was thinking Canoe Reeves, you know. It's like,
yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
Speaking of Canadians.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. When you do this, but does each book stand alone in the series? Like, could someone pick up just book two without having read book one and they'll still get a good story?
Correct. While I always encourage all readers to read from the beginning of each series, it's not always possible, especially if you're doing something like Vince Flynn or C.J. Box, and I go, you know, you're into the book 20s before you pick one up. So, however, if I do reference something within my first novel in the second, I do just a half quarter paragraph or something to give people a little bit of the backstory, but it's not required reading, no.
Now, you know, with dealing with policing and that, are you kind of cautious about what kind of crimes or what kind of things you're going to include in this, especially with it being so hot in the U.S., like with all of the, you know, the big cases making news and everyone's watching these trials and there's a lot of race issues and stuff. Are you just staying away from that, or are you including any of that?
At this point,
yeah,
I would shy away from it.
Yeah,
it's controversial, and while I don't know the numbers enough to give you a percentage rate, like, oh, only 3% of the people are bothered by this. Well, if that 3% are readers, then they're not gonna even want to pick up my novel, and if they don't tell word of bad mouth, I'm not exactly sure. However, there are enough topics out there that I don't need to go into too much. For example, like the second novel is about a serial killer, the third novel is about a missing child case, and the fourth one's going to involve gun running, illegal guns, through an arms dealer, stuff like that. So book five, I'm already researching on the side. I'm hesitant to do it because the research is dark. It's all about human trafficking. And I've been talking to some, mostly the ATF down in Georgiana for some research materials. And it's not pretty. So it's a dark hole to go down, and not talking about it doesn't make it go away. So,
right. Well, you just have to be careful on how you address it, because these are the days of being labeled. You know, oh, you're this, you're that.
And correct.
You have to be very careful. You know, I happen to know a guy that did a really good book called In Chains, which is about human trafficking.
Oh, that Alan Warren guy.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It was a bestseller. It did really well. It still
does really well.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get this guy's number and give him a call one day.
Yeah. Well, you just, no, you don't really want to talk to him. It's kind of weird. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of a little creepy. I would be careful. But
yeah, fair enough.
You know, just send them an email. Well, this is really interesting. So is there something you want people to get? So if I pick up Tipping Point, take it home, read it, and, you know, like it, the whole thing. But is there something you're hoping I take away from it? Is there some sort of feeling or thought that you want me to have, or is it just entertainment?
I believe, again, with the political situation of the United States last administration and certain things going on here, even in Canada, I don't want to be labeled anything untoward. However, I'm a firm believer in justice matters. And for that to occur in a book, you know, the guy is held accountable, or it's dealt with quietly, but it's dealt with. For me, I find that more important than a cliffhanger type novel where I have to wait for book two to or eight to finish off what's going to happen to this guy.
Well, and I think that's important. For me, I think there's a lot of people that feel the justice system in both countries and the UK, even at times, doesn't always serve well in the people's minds. They feel like, well, that isn't enough. How come this guy got 10 years for selling pot, and then this guy murdered someone, and he's out in three? Right? There's always these people talking, and a lot of it might be exaggerated, but I think there's a lot of people that aren't always happy with the way things turn out in the justice system. So in a way, having a book where it kind of holds, like, you know who did it, you know, the crime, whatever it is, and you hold them accountable, I think that sort of gives you a kind of a completion sort of feeling, like a feeling of satisfaction from that.
Mm-hmm. That also leads back into, do you need to read the second book or the first book? No, you could read the second book without having to read the first book. It's almost entirely complete in itself.
Can you sit down and kind of go, okay, well, today I've got, you know, from 10 to 2, so I'm just going to sit down and write. Like, I have nobody in the house and the dog's sleeping, so I can write. And can you just sit down and turn it on, or do you have to be in a certain mood?
Well, I write 7 days a week. At first, after I went back to work after my shoulder surgery, I continued to write.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And then I found I didn't have enough time in the day to really get into it, but I wanted to still do it. So I gave up a few things. TV. I don't really watch TV much anymore. Maybe an hour show a week with the wife to bond, I guess. And I set my alarm earlier. Instead of waking up at 6, I get up at 5 o'clock every day now. I have my coffee. It's quiet. There's nobody around. It's really quite horrible. Oh, good times. And I get a lot of writing done then. And before bed, I'll sit down for an hour and write again. Mostly it's just when I can and where I can. So
I'm the same as you. I do that. I'm up early and I write, and I write near bedtime as well when I'm alone, except for the dogs.
Yes. I'm still in bed just now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, he'll have breakfast after the interview.
Oh, good times.
Exactly. That's often true.
Well, you know, I mean, we all do what we need to do. I just find it interesting. But do you have, okay, so the last couple of years, and we kind of touched off, you know, you said something about the last administration. There was a lot of hairy, sort of scary times over the last 4 or 5 years, and then with the pandemic and with, you know, no mask rallies and all these crazy things going on. With that going on outside your door, does that sort of affect your feeling and when you write? Does it kind of get in the way?
I do know one thing, how, for the most part, no, it doesn't affect me when I'm in my own little tiny world. It's just me and my laptop. I'm sitting in my comfy chair and I'm typing away, wondering what else is Noah Hunter going to get into. One of the things I'm concerned about, and I know a lot of authors are, is do I introduce or have the pandemic within my novel? How will that play out? And I still don't know if I'm going to do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that you can avoid safely right now, because the thing is, I don't think we know how it's going to end. I don't think we know where it's going. Like when you're dealing with, I do older stories and crimes that happen, we kind of know what's happened in that time. You know, we know Hitler lost, let's say, you know,
right.
He went to the moon. Okay. He's hanging out with the aliens and all that.
You know, JFK too, I think.
Yeah, reptile. Yeah, JFK Jr.'s coming back.
Oh, too soon, guys. Too soon.
Yeah. Oh my God. Sorry, if that's what you believe, that's what you believe. Yeah. I'm not here to say.
No, I'm not sorry. If you believe it, you're crazy. I'm over. I'm over trying to be polite now. I'm just over it, because it starts to get into the way of our lives, our you know, just our sanity. We've got enough to deal with. We don't need these insane people spouting out. I'm just over
that one.
I'm just over it. I was so held my tongue for a couple of years. Oh, you don't want to get into that. You know, they won't listen to your show. They'll call you names. It's like, I'm over it. Call me names. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. But having said all of that, and it's my opinion only, so send me the hate mail. I enjoy it. So I would stay away from something like that, because you could get it wrong. You don't know what's coming down the pike, so to speak, right? So
right now my mindset is, as a reader, I like to read a novel to escape. I don't want to say reality, but or take my mind away from things, or enjoy an adventure that I can't go on. And when I'm reading about somebody having an adventure, still dealing with all the problems that I have to deal with every day, wearing masks or getting a fifth booster shot. Like, it's just, I don't think that'd be something I'd want in a novel as a reader. So that's where I'm leaning right now as a writer, to not include that.
Yeah. No, well, that makes sense. But, you know, having that darkness outside your door, so you have zombies outside your window when you're sitting in your chair typing.
Of course, so to speak. Yes.
But do you think that makes your writing get a little darker?
I
you know, maybe even without knowing. Because I think a lot of things go on in the world around us. Like, they, you know, when you talk to people that really know serial killers, for instance, from 60s and 70s, they were saying, well, you had a lot of people that were kids of parents that came back from the war, the way their dad treated the son type thing is growing up. So, like Peter Vronsky, he talks a lot about that. And it might be true, but at the same time, then what are the kids that we're creating now? So if that has, this society has this kind of effect on the people around us, do you ever think that maybe it has an effect on you as a writer without you really knowing? Like, would you look back in 10 years and kind of go, and you start looking through Tipping Point and you go, ooh, I guess I was a little bit angry here or something. I'm just throwing that out there. Do you think it affects you in that way?
As a whole, no. Where I am with my friends and family, and I'm not experiencing and never really did experience a horrific series of deaths, restrictions. We did have to wear masks. Could we go out to the bars and pubs? No, we couldn't. However, I'm 51. I'm not going out to a bar and pub anyway right now. I like being in bed by 9. So did that affect me in that regard? Yeah, I had to stay home more. What did I get from that? For me, it gave me more time to write, and I'm certainly taking advantage of it. I wrote 4 novels last year, and I'm on track for 3 next year. So,
well, things are looking up. I mean, they freed Britney.
Yeah, well, you can't go wrong with that.
I mean, hey, things are looking up. Things are getting better.
Poor girl.
Yeah, the poor girl. Well, yeah, you know. So, hey. Do you ever think that you're going to go, when you say you'll kind of touch off on maybe some other things, you don't want to stick in the same small town. And I get that. There was a show I was, Netflix or somebody that I watched, and it was a small town sheriff and this few people, and the same thing, you know, after so many things, happen, you start to think, boy, that's a pretty bad town for only 150 people.
Yeah.
But do you ever think you're going to get out of this kind of crime policing sort of justice concept and maybe write something different, like maybe like a romance like Mike does there?
Oh, stop.
Yes. Well, maybe a co-author with Mike on a couple novels, but yeah. I'll have to grow my hair long for this. So, will this go? Do I picture my series going on forever? No, I really don't. I do have other projects on the go right now, and I do have at least book 5 planned out already with Noah Hunter series, and I'm going to reevaluate as soon as I type the end on book 5, and I might shift my focus to another side project.
For the people that know you already, if you have fans out there that know you and they've read your books, what do you think would surprise them most to know about you? Like, do you read or listen to things that might totally surprise them?
I'm fairly well known, especially on Twitter, Facebook, as a thriller genre. I've read almost everybody, and I've devoured the series. And one of the things that I've surprised a few people with, especially after writing a police thriller novel, was the fact that I have a science fiction novel that I'm probably going to end up self-publishing at the end of February, as well as a fantasy series that's well underway as well.
So do you still have time to read yourself, read other books other than, you know, now that you're writing?
It's funny because I'm trying to, on Netflix, they had the, Amazon Prime, they had a new series came out called Eye of the World, based on a Robert Jordan books, the fantasy series, very well known. About 30 years ago, it started out, 88, I think. So anyway, I started watching it, and it was just okay. So I picked up the actual novel again a couple nights ago, and I started reading it. And I would read a few pages, and then I'd have to close the book. And then I'm like, how was those, like, two or three pages? They introduced like half dozen characters, the whole town, the barn, what he was eating. And so I go, how did Robert Jordan do that? It was just so well done that it's just, it was just a pleasure to read. But could I keep reading? No, I had to stop and study it and learn how did he do that in one paragraph, describe a whole barn so it felt like I was in it, that kind of thing. So my reading has slowed down quite a bit in that regard, because I find myself doing that all the time now.
Yeah, so you find that now that you're writing yourself, the way you react to a book you're reading is much different. You tend to analyze it a lot more.
For sure. And I've also discovered that I am really good at spotting errors in anybody's novel anywhere except my own. It's just, it's like a gift, really.
Yep.
Yeah, I could pull any of my books off the shelf, flip around, and I could find something that's just not quite right, and then I could read my own manuscript 12 times, and then somebody picks it up, and 3 seconds they go, oh, did you mean to say this? And I'm like, ah, yeah, thanks.
It's the worst when you're doing your audiobook, and then you're realizing, oh, this has been through editing like 15 darn times, and oh, no, here's the mistake.
Oh, no.
I have to say this, but I know it's a mistake, and it's already gone to the printer, so oh, well.
Oh, boy. Well, Daniel Silva had a book out, what was it, last year, chapter 13. The title of the chapter was called Switzerland. It went through Daniel Silva, one of the world's best writers, I think. And right now, nobody checked the title. It was spelled wrong. He spelled the word Switzerland wrong. So how many people did that go through? Yeah. So it happens. I know it happens, but every time something gets pointed out, it's like a knife being twisted in my guts a little more. Oh, geez. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We all know that. I'll actually look through your book and I'll let you know.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, I can't wait for that email.
I'll post it online. So who are your favorite authors then? Who do you look for inspiration, or who do you like to read?
One of the series I've been really enjoying lately, and it's had a little bit of impact on my current police thriller series, is David Baldacci, his Amos Decker series with the, I believe Amos Decker has moved in and is working with the FBI, and he used to be a police officer who had a football accident. And he has a perfect memory recall. So, and then he gets into the bad cases, and he ends up, you know, solving them because it's a novel. And I really enjoyed that series. It's just fantastic. One of my other series it was the Mitch Rapp series with Vince Flynn, and who's been taken over since Vince passed away, is Kyle Mills. And Kyle Mills has done an incredible job of carrying on the legacy Vince Flynn has left. So from other novels like that coming out that I've been devouring is Jack Carr. I love Nick Petrie. His Peter Ash series is one of my favorites I've ever read. But I also like the science fiction fantasy stuff from earlier from Greg Bear, like I already mentioned, Robert Jordan, Ellie Modsett Jr. So there's quite a bit of material for me to read in my background there.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's quite a science fiction into crime. I wonder, so do you like the older science fiction or is the newer stuff? Because it's quite different.
When I first started reading it, it was an older science fiction. So Robert A. Heinlein, I think, is a trendsetter. He created so many wonderful, beautiful novels. Same with Alan Dean Foster. Sorry, mm-hmm. It's just I love that kind of stuff. It was just amazing back then in the early '80s. That's what I was right into. So as to like Greg Bear, Ender's Game, stuff like that, it's just all so good. It seems to be a dying genre. However, it's not as I'm trying to think of how to say this properly here. it just doesn't seem to be getting the attention that it used to. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, but these things come and go, and I think it's the science fiction's got, you know, with the fantasy and all the different subgenres of it. It just kind of, right. it's almost crazy. I can't keep up with how many, you know, different types and hard science fiction and fantasy and young fantasy and urban. And it's like, I'm getting a lot of names, and it's just like, it's hard for me to decide which is whatever happened to the old Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
I had to look up what steampunk meant, you know.
Oh yeah, that was
like seriously, guys, come on. It's just science fiction. Move on.
I had that yesterday and he was a steampunk and it's like, what is steampunk, what do you mean?
Yeah,
it sounds like a band from the 80s.
yeah I'm good with that. Well, yeah. one of the things I really like to do is write in the thriller genre. However, one of the other side projects I have is a fantasy series. I'm talking magic, swinging the swords, all that good stuff. However, I found I'm having difficulty writing in the same capacity as Tolkien or Robert Jordan or any of those. So I'm writing the fantasy series as if it's a thriller, a modern thriller with, you know, shortened chapters, more action, descriptive action, more tense, so it'll entice the reader, bring him in, instead of, you know, five pages describing the meal this guy had as he's getting on his horse, I'm getting right into the action of it. So then I think I'm hoping I'm putting a really good new twist on it, on an older genre.
Well, yeah. You just say you're doing a new type, and if people don't like it, you can say, well, you're ahead of your time. But, you know, when you get into fantasy and science fiction, I always like to find out from writers like that, are you using old rules or standard rules, or where do you get your rules from? And I mean that in the sense of, let's say, magic, werewolves, vampires, like all these different, mythical kind of creatures and stuff. There's certain rules that have been applied to them. You know, they can't go out in the daylight, the cross, all these sort of, and even with magic, do you sort of absorb what's already sort of said about magic, for instance, like you said that, or do you kind of create your own right from scratch?
I found the fantasy series that I'm currently writing. I'm halfway through book two right now. Is based around the magic in this realm is based off gems. Some of these gems have certain properties and others have and grant some abilities to a select few. And has that been done before? You know what? It may have. I can't recall. So is it it's new to me, what I'm creating? However, I do know if you give five authors a detailed subject list of how you're going to write a novel, and you'll get five different results. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying to, what I'm hoping will be achieved through that. As for, you know, the rules set by vampires and whatnot, well, maybe he's an atheist. The cross doesn't work on him.
Exactly.
You know,
I like that.
Sure, why not? I can go with that. Sure.
I'm for that. There you go. I'd like to see that.
Well, the good part is it's my world, whether it's a police thriller novel or a science fiction or a time travel novel coming out in February. It's my world. I can do what I want in it, and hopefully the reader will like it and follow me along for the journey.
Groovy.
How do you like to interact with your people? Do you like interacting with readers and people and exchanging? And do you like social media and that whole thing, or are you kind of shy away from it?
I'll take it in two parts. Do I like interacting with my reader? Yes. Oh my God. Sometimes the feedback is what you need to get through a day and to sit your butt down in the chair and write again, to keep going. It's your motivation. This guy I've never met before messaged me. He's from India, and he goes, I loved your book. He goes, I thought it was incredible, and the fact that you did it as a self-published and you had to go through all that yourself and didn't have the big agency behind you. And he goes, I liked it better for that because you did a great job. And he goes, I liked it better than that traditionally published novel that just came out and everybody's bragging about. And I go, well, thank you. Motivation right there. I'm at the point where, you know, get off my lawn. I'm getting older, and I'm really not a big fan of the social media. However, it is essential, I believe, right now for any business, interaction, networking. And in that regard, I follow it and I do it as part of your day. If not, 2 weeks later, it'll be like, Dave Darling, who, you know,
Well, that's, so when you get a bad review, what do you do? Hunt them down, kill them? Like what?
Nope. I would rather have an honest review. If it's honest, that's fair enough. I don't think that's too bad to ask for. Good. I'd rather have an honest review. And if you didn't feel it was good, let me know why. Why didn't you feel it was good? Or justify your review. I'm not going to lie. Anybody can go check right now. All my reviews are quite positive. In fact, my lowest review was a 3-star, which I'm like, wow, that's great. So another motivational factor that keeps me wanting to write.
Well, we'll get that changed.
Yeah, well, thank you. I already knew you guys were going to say that, and I felt stupid for continuing on, but I
walked into that one.
What was I going to do, you know?
What can you do? Well, Mr. Dave, what is your website, or how do you like people to get a hold of you?
The easiest thing to remember is daviddarlingbooks.com. From there, you'll find my email address, my Facebook, Twitter, maybe my Instagram page, something like that, and you could always find me there.
You need to be on TikTok next.
I didn't think I was ever going to do it. My wife said, people are selling books through TikTok. And I go, No, are you serious? So, yeah, I joined TikTok as well. And actually, I had a few sales, so I was kind of pleased with that.
It's going well. Well, great. Now, the book we're talking about, you've got the new book coming out here on November 30th here, which when this airs, it'll just be yesterday. So it's called Grave Choices, and it's part two, or book two, I should say, of the Noah Hunter series. And book one is already out. You should get it, The Tipping Point. And these are must-buy books for the thriller suspense fan. So our guest is the author of these books, Mr. David Darling. Thank you for being here.
No problem. Thank you, Alan. And thank you, Mike, for having me and putting up with me. It was just an almost pleasure.
Almost.
Get the latest news and opinions from Eric Shapiro from the House of Mystery website
in the Shapiro Report.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.